You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Wonderful, majestic world around us. It's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
Hello.
We're joined here by Dr. Krishla McGovern. Hello.
Hi.
How are you going?
Good. How are you guys going?
Oh, yeah. Awesome. We've got some really cool topics to talk about today, and I'm so excited for this first one. I really want to get into it. Dinosaurs. Well, the Spinosaurus, or the Hell Heron,
as
you called it. Can you tell us about this?
So the story starts 95 million years ago when there was this...
Where most stories start.
Yeah, you know. Just a little bit back in time.
Yeah.
There's, you know, this creature wandering along a riverbed in the middle of what's now the Saharan Desert, and fell over dead, obviously, and it's been fossilized, and now it's been found, and it's a Spinosaurus. So
what makes it, what's specific about this species?
So what makes this really cool, and what caused a lot of confusion for the paleontologists initially, was on its head, it has this blade-like crest. So it basically has this head adornment that, you see in birds and stuff now, but it was like half a meter long. So it was huge. And Spinosaurus, like, it also had this big sail on its back. Like, it had, eventually just a sail looking thing. So it was kind of an interesting looking beast. If you look at the reconstructions, you can see it online and stuff. But they basically, it's this really incredible fossil where the story 95 million years ago, dies, fossilized. 2019, a group of paleontologists were actually led by a local guide from what's called the Tuareg community. Like, it's a nomadic population that live in the Saharan Desert. And so they basically must have had seen something strange. And so they took these paleontologists out to the site. And the first thing that was weird was black bones. Like, it's not typically what your fossil colour is.
Yeah, right.
So they were already going, okay, this is a bit strange. And what it is those actually have a lot of phosphate in them, so that's what's making them black. But they were really confused about what it was. Like, how did it fit in the skeleton? Because it was this really weird, big, asymmetric bone. They're like, what's going on? So it took them another 3 years to get back out there with a much bigger team to do a bigger dig. And they, thankfully, they found a skull that had a partial part of one of these crests on it. So they suddenly went, right, that's what their bone is. It's a crest. Because it's, you know, if a frame of reference of, well, what is the strange shape sort of blade bone?
Yeah.
And then what they did was some CT and stuff. And so what you can tell is there's, on the surface of it, there are attachment sites. So it would have had keratin over it. So, you know, the stuff that makes up your fingernails would have been over this bone as kind of a protective thing. And that's what we see that in things like guinea fowl and stuff today. Mm. And so it was obviously a fish eater, or like hunted fish, because it's got teeth where the lower jaw protrudes out so that it interlocks with the top jaw. So, you know, our teeth go together, one on top of the other kind of thing when we close, whereas this had an interlocking jaw sort of thing. And so that makes it easier to catch fish, which are nice and slippery and, you know, you need to kind of trap them in.
Yeah.
And so it's quite cool where they've called it the Hell Heron, though. Why that is because it's got these wicked teeth, so it's pretty scary looking. But it probably fed like a heron, like it walked around the water areas and fed in the shallows and stuff, rather than really swimming. Because if you think about that big sail on the back, that probably made getting through the water a little bit of a challenge.
Yeah,
you know, if
right.
you want to turn, you kind of got this big sail on your back that you've got to turn all this, move all this water.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Oh, interesting. That's probably not every day that you get a new species of dinosaur.
Well, is it more common than I think that it is? Not every day.
Yeah.
But we're actually in a period of time where, like, more and more dinosaurs are being named each year than ever before. And it's because there's a lot more access to a lot more places in the world.
Yeah.
Africa's really probably, like, the Saharan Desert is, to be like, in the next few years, probably going to be quite a treasure trove because it hasn't been thoroughly picked over in that. Whereas, like, North America, there's been a lot of dinosaur discovery over many, many years. So, but yeah, it's very cool.
Interesting. Okay, we'll go to our next topic. This is about bed bugs, which I was surprised to see this news because I was like, did they not know that already? That bed bugs don't like water?
Yeah,
that's
no.
That's crazy.
Weird, right? Like,
yeah. They only just discovered this. Are
yeah,
you joking?
I was like, what is going on here? So it's probably that maybe it's something that people have observed, but they've never really studied. So no one's really talked about it, written it up.
Right.
But yeah, bed bugs really don't like water.
Yeah.
They will run away. Yeah, and completely just one of those serendipitous studies where the students and the postdocs in the lab that study bed bugs, because, well, why wouldn't you study bed bugs?
Yeah.
They keep them in vials. So they have a colony that they'll keep in vials, and on top of these vials, they'll put like a membrane, and on top of that is the blood. So they put paper on the side of these vials so that the bed bugs crawl up, they poke their mouth bits through the membrane, they suck the blood, and they feed. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's how you do it. That's how you keep your bed bugs alive. But what happened is this membrane had a small tear in it, and so the blood kind of leaked out into the paper. And they were like, oh, that's fine. The bed bugs will just drink the blood from the paper. No problems. The bed bugs wouldn't go near it. And they're like, what? Why, what? And then so then they were, okay, well, let's put some water on this paper and we'll see what happens. The bed bugs wouldn't go near it. They're like, okay. And so then they did a whole lot of other studies where it was much more controlled, and they used like thermal cameras and magnifiers and stuff to really study how close the bed bugs got to the water and how fast they ran away. And basically, you know, a bed bug would be crawling along, then they'd kind of sense water and they'd run away. Mm-hmm. And if you were younger, you would run away even quicker. And they kind of, when they looked at it, and they're like, oh, this does actually make sense that bed bugs don't like water, because they're really kind of flat, and on their bellies is what are called spiracles. And so some insects, they'll have these like air holes basically to get for their respiration. And so if you get this small flat thing gets on top of water, it kind of gets stuck there, right? Because water with surface tension, you know, while you get water beads and stuff, it's actually hard to escape for that little insect, and so it basically covers up its respiration holes and will suffocate itself. So it's maybe not surprising they've evolved to not go near water.
So just like shower, guys.
That's basically what they said. But it does have implications for when you're trying to get rid of an infestation, right? Because if you use a water-based insecticide, you need to kill the bugs straight away. If you don't kill them, they'll run away from that insecticide. So if you have it on a surface or something, thinking that if I leave it there, that'll kill them over time. No, they're not going near it. So you got
Take
a shower. Yeah. You know, that'll get them off your body.
Waterbed, maybe? I don't know if that would work, actually. Okay. Okay, final topic here. A new discovery about inner ear hair cells to do with hearing loss or hearing?
Yeah, so it's more of an developing our understanding of hearing loss. Like, there's a lot we still have to learn about hearing loss, particularly in the inner ear. So when we hear, we have the sticky out bits on the side of our head, the pinna, that basically funnels the sound into our ear canal. It hits our eardrum. That vibrates. There's a chain of three little bones behind that called the ossicles. They vibrate onto what's called the oval window of your cochlea. And then your cochlea, you can basically think of it as your head snails. They're these small spiral shapes that are in your skull, and they're filled with fluid. So when that window vibrates, it moves the fluid through, and so then you get these hair cells in your cochlea that will bend as this fluid passes. And when they bend, it basically sends an electrical signal to your auditory nerve. Your brain interprets it as sound, and we hear. And so often when you get some types of hearing loss, it's all about these hair cells being damaged and no longer working, because they don't actually regenerate. Once they're dead, they're dead.
Yeah, right.
And so for a long time, it's been when these cells bend, they have these things called channel proteins that basically allow ions to move, which is what generates the electrical signal. So it's often these channel proteins called TMC1 and TMC2. We're quite imaginative there. It was about what are they? They're failing. Something's going wrong and these hair cells are dying. But what they've discovered and what this presentation was about was that these proteins, they don't just open up these channels. They're also moving what are called phospholipids in the cell membrane. Mm-hmm. So your cell membrane is basically two layers of these things called phospholipids, which they have a head and a tail. And so these two layers form by the tails kind of meeting up to each other and the head sticking out. And then specific phospholipids are on specific sites. And if you mess that up, you start to mess up the cell functionality and whether it performs its function. And so that's what they think is happening here when you get some forms of hearing loss, is that those proteins are no longer performing that function properly, which is causing the cells to die. And so that's why you're no longer hearing, because you don't have the hair cells to basically produce the signal for your brain anymore.
Yeah. Is there a way for them to like lengthen the amount of time that these are functioning?
Not yet. No. As an initial thought, it's more important from an understanding of us losing it, because there are actually some treatments that can lead to hearing loss. So there are some form of antibiotics that for some people have a severe artifact that can result in some hearing loss and stuff. And so they think that maybe that the mechanism by which that is happening is associated with what they've found about these proteins in the hair cells, which is not something we have a really good understanding of at the moment. There's a lot about the hearing loss that's based in your cochlea that we still don't have a lot of understanding for. So
yeah,
this is just a piece to the puzzle.
No, okay. That's cool. Thank you so much for sharing. That's all of our topics for today. I've got a shout out for Motat, which is the sponsor of Dear Science. Next month, which is on the 28th to 29th of March, they've got the STEM Fair, which is back at Motat. There will be hands-on activities and demonstrations all weekend long, so check out that. Thank you, Krishla, as always, for joining us, or every second week. thank you, Motat, and thank you, Science. We'll be right back after a quick break. Keep it on the beat.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to Motat, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.